This podcast is brought to you by the Legarten Institute. I'm Sianne Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this conversation.
I'm Anne Applebaum. I'm the Director of the Transitions Forum at the Legarten Institute, and I am talking to my colleague, Peter Pomerantsev, and we're talking about his new book, which is called Nothing is True and Everything is Possible, Adventures in Modern Russia. And before he begins explaining it himself, I would just say that it's a spectacular book, and I was trying to think to what I could compare it, and I finally came up with Heart of Darkness. It's really a kind of journey into the soul of modern Russia via television, but I'll let Peter explain.
Yeah, I mean, it's Heart of Darkness is a very good parallel. I also had Dante in my head as I was running it, sort of, and Cabaret, you know, the Christopher Isherwood, Liza Minnelli co-production, so to speak. It's my journey into Russia, but also in a period when Russia goes from sort of glamour to fascism, from decadence to madness, from the heights of the oil boom, where it's one of the most exciting places to be, right through to the current sort of quasi-clerical fascism that has taken over the country. So it sort of starts off very bright and glossy, the book, and ends up in a very, very dark and I hope not utterly dispiriting, but largely depressing place.
Is there a piece of the book? Are there a few sentences, or is there a paragraph you'd like to read aloud with listeners?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, the my description of Russia at the start, just as I meet the country. Performance was the city's buzzword, a world where gangsters become artists, gold diggers quote Pushkin, hell's angels hallucinate themselves as saints. Russia had seen so many worlds flick through in such blistering progression, from communism to perestroika to shock therapy, to penury to oligarchy, to mafia state to mega-rich, that its new heroes were left with the sense that life is just one glittering masquerade, where every role and any position or belief is mutable. I want to try on every persona the world had ever known, Vladik Mamishev Monroe would tell me. He was a performance artist and the city's mascot, the inevitable guest at parties attended by the inevitable tycoons and supermodels, arriving dressed as Gorbachev, a fakir, Tutankhamun, the Russian president. When I first landed in Moscow, I thought these infinite transformations, the expression of a country liberated, pulling on different costumes in a frenzy of freedom, pushing the limits of personality as far as it could possibly go to what the president's vizier would call the heights of creation. It was only years later that I came to see these endless mutations, not as freedom, but as forms of delirium, in which scare puppets and nightmare mystics become convinced they're almost real and march towards what the president's vizier would go on to call the Fifth World War, the first non-linear war of all against all. So that's a little bit at the start of the book where I kind of conceive a little bit of its finale as well.
Is there a moment? I mean, was there a kind of turning point for you? You know, you said when you describe how you arrive in Moscow and it's all very glamorous and shiny and so on. And was there a big moment you can point to where it began to change?
Well, I work there as a TV producer, and TV is sort of the main mechanism of Putin's very curious breed of authoritarianism. So almost my first meeting there was already sort of stunning, because I came into a smoky room full of propagandists who were literally making up the script of society. So they would go, they were like Prosperos who could create any reality they wanted to. So they would go, well, we'll have this politician as the sort of pseudo-opposition this week. Let's have the crazy communists as the opposition, rowing with the crazy right-wing nationalists, all to make Putin look good by contrast. So it was amazing. I had sort of a point of view onto sort of the backstage of a sham democracy where everything was written and controlled by the Kremlin. So that was already a massive shock. But also, as I started to make films about this world, the stories took me into very, very strange and dark places. So I made a story about a young businesswoman who should have really been sort of a poster girl for Russian TV and for Russian society, sort of successful, safe, self-made businesswoman who had her business taken away overnight by some greedy bureaucrats. So the stories kept on kind of showing me the sort of the underbelly of society. And when I was told that I could make these stories anymore because it was not the message the Kremlin wanted to put out, it was pretty clear to me that I was living in a country that was far from a democracy.
Mm-hmm. And with the meetings you referred to at the beginning, is this what Russians mean when they use this expression, political technology? Because I think it's something that Western audiences don't really understand.
Sure, yeah. The political technologists are the sort of elite class of Russians who rule the country. And the closest thing we can compare them to are viziers, you know, in like the Arabian
spin
Nights.
Spin doctors, yeah.
Spin doctors work inside a system where, you know, the media are saying one thing, opposition politicians another, and they have to play them off. Imagine a spin doctor had no opposition and he could actually compose society like a film director. That's what a political technologist is. It's something from sort of, you know, Alibaba kind of territory. It's a, you know, it's from a different era. We can't, a decentralized society with checks and balances can't have a political technologist. It has to be a centralized authoritarian country.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was, I thought when I was reading the book, I almost had this idea that you were playing with the idea of film and TV almost as a kind of metaphor for how Russia works, you know, that it's a, you know, it's all for show and then other things are happening behind the scenes. Did that occur to you?
Completely occurred to me. And that sort of metaphor goes on and on and on. I mean, firstly, it's a practical thing because Russia is ruled through television. And television by its very nature creates sort of illusions and copies. So it becomes a society that creates lots of illusions and holograms and copies. So it's almost the technological key to the society creates its, creates the nature of the authoritarian regime. But yes, it is all about society as a piece of film, society as one huge reality show, a scripted reality show directed by the Kremlin.
And what's it all for? I mean, as you watch this, you know, system of propaganda and the system of messaging being created, you know, what's the purpose of it? Where is it going? What do they want to get from it?
Well, it's survivalist. They want to stay in power. So
they meaning the government. Or
yeah,
the
Kremlin and the people around them. So there was this facade which was directed through TV, while backstage, the largest probably kleptocracy in the history of the world was taking place and hundreds of billions were being stolen. But also more than that, I mean, they found the TV was a form of sort of colonizing your own people, a way of sort of taming them, confusing them, keeping them distracted while you steal all this money. But increasingly, they've become to believe in the power of TV so much, it's now their key foreign policy tool. So now they have a theory of something they call information psychological war, which is not quite what we're seeing in Ukraine. It's the idea of contactless war, the idea that they could bring a country like Estonia or Hungary or even Germany, not to its knees, but almost to its knees, just through the power of media and psychological manipulation. So they've really begun to believe in the almost infinite power of their television and media.
Do you think they've overrated themselves?
They always overrate themselves. They're always full of hubris, but before the hubris catches up with them, they can do a hell of a lot of damage. The vulnerable, I think we're very sort of casual about it in Britain, because we look at something like Russia Today and go, look, it's a joke. And it is. It's not going to subvert Britain, let's be serious, even though financial corruption might. But a country like Hungary, Slovakia, where right-wing forces are growing, where there's less and less faith in centralized government, where there's incredible resentment towards the West, and where Russia is just tapping into that and now is pushing media, their own media, into that sort of ferment, there it can be very, very dangerous.
Thank you very much. I encourage all listeners to read your book.
Thank you.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.